Hello and welcome to the award-winning Canine Hooper's World podcast. Everyone's invited. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of season 4 of Canine Hooper's World podcast. Now, I've got a special guest today, and we've worked together in like real world dog training. Well, actually virtual world dog training before, but she's now coming on the podcast as a guest. Leanne, hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming, like, because you are a very, very busy lady in the world. People don't know you. Who are you? What do you do?
So my name's Leanne McQuaid and I'm the head of training at Dog Training College. We predominantly bring professionals together, we provide education for them, and we also train people up to become dog trainers as well.
So there's lots of different branches to the magical tree, which we love. And I've been a member of Dog Training, I'm a member of Dog Training College, and also I've done some webinars for you guys because I love the fact that you do so many different webinars on so many different subjects and just educating trainers on how to be good ethical trainers. Notice the emphasis on the word ethical, because there's a lot of shit out there at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you can't be the expert in everything. So for us, having a variety of speakers from different backgrounds, from talking about different topics, because the dog training world is so vast when you think about everything that we look at when we take on a case, isn't it? So getting expert knowledge from across the board on all sorts of topics is one thing we're really passionate about.
Yeah, because when I did the webinars with you guys, I did one on Hoopers because that's like the obvious one. But I also did one on adolescents, which I think some people are a bit like, oh, Carrie's talking about adolescents, what? But I just had to be honest about the journey I was going through with Dodge at the time, because like the listeners know, like, he's just a dick.
That's okay. I'm going through adolescence myself at the moment.
it's really hard. And I think that as trainers, we maybe go in a little bit cocky, like, yeah, we're qualified, we can do this. And then the shit hits the van and you go, oh.
Yeah, it definitely grounds you having an adolescent dog. It brings you back down to earth, especially not having one for so long as well. It's really challenging.
Very humbling, isn't it? It kind of, it brings you back to being a mere mortal.
Yeah, definitely knocks you on your ass.
Yeah, big time. So can we talk, first of all, let's talk about your new one. And I'm just going to do a little warning to the listeners, because we are going to broach on a subject that's likely to make me and Leanne and possibly everyone else cry. If you have recently lost a pet and are maybe feeling a little bit vulnerable, I would probably skip at least 5 minutes of the pod, maybe 10. So that's just your little warning. So if you are feeling a little bit emotional and not in the best place because you've recently had a pet bereavement, then skip ahead 10 minutes and we'll be talking about more fluffy stuff. But I think we'll do this bit right now and get it done. I kind of want to rip the plaster off and then we can do the rest of the stuff for the podcast. So obviously the listeners know I've recently, I mean this year, lost two of mine. You lost one of yours. Let's kind of cover where we're going with this.
Yeah, so I think what a lot of professionals don't talk about, especially when you're public face and, you know, people know your life, they follow your journey and the things in which you do, they have certain expectations of you because of your position or what it is that you do. And I think what professionals don't talk about is that second dog after a loss. Mm-hmm. So for me, I didn't do anything for a good 3-4 months, and equally Hazel had a lot of issues that she came with. Even though we got her at 18 weeks, she had parvo prior to that. She was abandoned in the park, and there were only 3 of them left, which we can only imagine that survived that far during the parvo process. So she spent a lot of her critical period time in isolation, in the vets, being very, very poorly, and getting over that hump. So that's created a whole list of things, even though we got her as a puppy, you know. But for me, because I had that huge hole in my heart, I as a house, I felt like my home was not home anymore without our dog, you know, without Mitzi. And I remember we did a 2-day practical weekend with a load of students, being in person, seeing them working with their dogs and just seeing that relationship. And I had to come home to an empty home. And I just did not want to go home. I had a big old crying fit in the car, refusing to go home because it wasn't a home to me without a dog.
Yeah.
So we found Hazel. Well, actually, we found Chester, who passed of Parvo. So we had all the boys all looking forward to receiving a dog to then have to tell them, actually, he's passed. And then the rescue offered us Hazel after that.
So just quickly, so you, in a way, well, you did. You lost one dog, then you lost the second dog. Very close together. And that, your heart's already broken, and then you just think it can't break anymore. And then a puppy's almost like a little beacon of light, isn't it? It's a little glimmer of like, oh, okay, there's like still good stuff to come. So to then lose that, mate, honestly, like, wow.
Yeah, and it was hard enough for us, but watching your children go through that loss again after getting their hopes up, after being so sad, and for them, it was their first loss as well. You know, Mitzi was their childhood dog.
Wow.
You know,
she'd
been with Ethan since he was 2.5, 3 years old. She was there when Finley was born. So it was their first death, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were really looking forward to receiving Chester. And then to break that news to them that actually Chester wouldn't be coming with us and going through that again was a massive blow to them.
Mm-hmm.
So really hard supporting them through yet another loss.
Yeah, and you've got to be a mum, but also your heart is still broken as well. Like, mate, honestly.
Yeah, it was really difficult. And because they hadn't met him, because he was another rescue, and we were waiting for him to reach the 12 weeks old. He was born in rescue.
Okay.
You know, it was different. It's not as if they had a relationship, but they had the hopes.
Yeah. And, I mean, sorry if I'm speaking out of turn, but I almost feel like in that situation, maybe it was a kind of thing that they didn't have him in their lives, like tactically, like they had the kind of, as you say, the hopes and the, oh my God, we're getting her, but they hadn't actually kind of made that bond with a physical puppy yet. So, I mean, I'm not downplaying that grief at all because it must have been awful, but then the next one came along. So tell us about her.
So we then got the offer of Hazel, and due to what had happened with Chester, we decided not to tell the boys. You know, I could not go through that at the time.
Mate, no, 100%, get that, yep.
And Hazel had, though she had the same issue as Chester with it being Parvo, Hazel had gotten over it, so we were at the safe zone with her. So they were just waiting for her to be signed off at the vets, really, to say that she's healthy enough to leave, and then we could go and get her. So we got her. And for me, the biggest thing was relationship. I really wanted that relationship. And for some reason, I kind of got it in my head that training would go against relationship building. And I don't know why I got that. And I do think it was due to the loss of Mitzi, missing her. Equally, she was like Dodge. She was a management case, you know. And when you go from a management case where you're looking around the corner every single day, where every single day is a potential fight.
Every day is a meerkat walk day, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it made me question my relationship with Mitzi and how, you know, did I do the best that I could do for her and things like that. And then, so when I got Hazel, you know, it was just all about love. It was all about fun stuff. And I'm not saying that training isn't fun, because absolutely training is fun. But my head was very torn, I will say, at this stage.
But the thing is as well, when you have, I love the way you phrase that, as a dog that like needs management. Like, it is different. Like, hubby jokes all the time that he hates walking, dodging me. Like, walking Minx is easy because worst case scenario, you just pick her up and, like, it's fine. But you have to be vigilant with him. You have to be mindful. You know, we went to a brand new walk yesterday, and I'm not going to lie, I was literally like a meerkat, just scanning the horizon everywhere for, like, mainly dogs, actually, because one thing that was really interesting yesterday was we had a few cyclists come past us, and actually quite fast, didn't bat an eyelid. I was like, okay, so bicycles are cool, wicked, tick, we can calm down about it. He saw deer yesterday, he's never seen deer before as far as I'm aware, and he went, oh, there's like ponies with things on their heads, cool. Like, and he wasn't bothered by them. But it is hard, and it's very difficult to kind of adjust how much management is needed, because when you're working with a dog like Dodge or like Mitzi was, where there is always a layer of management in there, it does change your perspective on how you're training, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like you're always holding your breath with a dog like that, you know? So to actually go for that period of time where I could breathe, and then thinking about getting another dog, and I was able to continue to breathe, you know, I wasn't holding my breath, I wasn't so tense. It is very weird. It's very different.
Yeah, it is. So what was the kind of gap in the end from, like, the first loss, obviously there was the second loss, but then you bringing the new one home, Hazel?
So 2 months.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and I know that isn't a long time, but we truly felt as a household that something was missing, and the loneliness. I think when you've got multiple dogs in the house, it may be very different because you still have some sort of routine stuck in there, whereas my life revolved around Mitzi. Everything I did revolved around her every single day. And then she wasn't there, and I didn't have that, you know, I didn't have that purpose. And yeah, it just, God.
I don't think it's a bad thing to have, and there might be some people thinking, oh, that's quick. So here we go, little confess. The longest in my whole entire life, from being a baby to 40 plus, is 1 week I've spent my life without a dog.
Yeah.
We went into it knowing
that they would never be the same dog, and that, you know, and I think that's important if you are going to get another dog very, very quickly. You cannot compare them because they will never live up to that expectation. They will never be that dog. And equally, you're setting that dog up to always fail and fall short. So if you go into it, you have to have things separated. So, you know, we got rid of everything. I won't even have the same colour on Hazel.
Yep. You know, I understand that.
New harness, new bed, new everything.
Yeah.
No, they have to be treated very, very separately.
Yep. I totally understand that. And I think because for me, I mean, I was much younger. I would have been my teens when we didn't have a dog in the house, and we lost one of our collies and then ended up with another collie. And I think at that age, it was different. But I understand even just the difference of coming home and there's only two dogs in the house now. And honestly, life is easy with two dogs. I'm going to be like, I'll be honest, you know, it is easy. But one thing that's mainly changed for me is that the girls would quite often stay at home together and Dodge would come out for me to work or whatever. And the girls were happy just chilling at home. Since losing the other two, Minx is now coming to work with me and she wants to come to work for me. She doesn't want to be in the house on her own. Like, and I think before she's kind of, and she was never, as much as she was Chica's daughter, they weren't really like, you'd never find Minx curled up with one of the others. That's just not the sort of dog she is. But she obviously does miss having the other two around, especially because we have mum and daughter as well. That was a big impact. But I found that it's actually quite nice. She's hilarious. She literally comes out and she sits in the front of the van. I've got a big crate in the back she should go in, but I've got a proper chihuahua-like booster seat in the front that Her Highness has to sit in, and she'll literally come out and wee like once, and then she just sits in the front of the van all day. And that's all she wants to do. But it's like, at least I know, like, she's there, and if she needs something, I can give it to her. Whereas if I'd left her at home, I'd be like, oh, is she all right? Whereas before, I never used to worry about leaving the girls for a few hours because they would just be asleep. So even going from like 4 to 2 was a massive difference for us. But I can't imagine, like, honestly, I don't think I could. My hat's off to you that, to be honest, you did 2 months without having a dog in the house, because I don't think I could. Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason why we're a multi-dog household. You know, I don't know. I've just kind of got used to having more than one dog around.
I will say, with Hazel in adolescence, I do wonder how on earth people do multi-dogs.
But I guess
never allowed for a multi-dog household, but having Hazel, it's like, oh my God, could I do another? Absolutely not.
I mean, I'd be very mindful of the gap between, like, the age gap, because this is the other thing. We had Munch and Chica were less than a year's age difference. And looking at it from the kind of the final end of it, we then lost them very close together. And that's why now I would always be kind of more inclined to have at least 2 years between, if not more. But then, you know, we never know when things are going to happen, and shit happens at times. But I just kind of feel like I'm trying to set myself up for success. And there was a really interesting thread on, I think it was the Fenzie Academy the other day, saying, like, you know, between sport dogs, what gaps do people give? And I would say the kind of average was between 3 and 4 years old, because then you've got the first dog competing and doing the stuff and they're kind of established. And then you can start sort of bringing the puppy in and building them up. And then as this one's retiring or starting to retire a bit, then this one's getting ready to compete. And I'm like, but having, like, multiple dogs all competing at once, like, that blows my brain. I'm like,
boom. Yeah, I found starting everything again much harder, or maybe I've not wanted to get into it so much. You know, Mitzi was perfect. You know, she knew everything which I needed her to do, and then having to redo all of that work into a new dog, I definitely, you know, I lost my mojo for a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, I'm happy to say that. But yeah, it is different, and you know, you've got different temperaments, you've got different personalities, so you have to adjust to them. Like, I found Hazel, she doesn't pair keywords very well to behaviours. Yet, okay. Someone literally said to me the other day, is that because you had a deaf dog previously? I was like, am I training differently then? And yeah, it probably is me. And how are you?
Okay. That's so interesting.
I need to make the adjustments, don't I?
Yeah.
Maybe it's me.
No, but I think that's very interesting. Also, it's very difficult. Like, I've now said, and I'll happily make this public, I don't think I could have another chihuahua.
Yeah.
Because Chica was just the ultimate. Like, she was just epic. Like, she just did everything. And Minx is just Minx, you know, and I love her dilly, and, like, she's just pure sass. Because I know if I got another chihuahua, it would be very hard for me to not make comparisons. And I would find that really hard. So now I'm like, so maybe the next one could be Papillon or something like that. Something that's kind of not completely different, but it's different enough for me to go, this is a different dog. You know, I'm never getting another German Shepherd, but that's for completely other reasons. Did you find, because were they both ball breeds? They're both ball.
Yes.
Yeah. It was ball breed. And I mean, both kind of similar or different, or I'm just sort of wondering.
So
we have a type of dog you like, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love a bull breed, and I also have a really soft spot for Rottweilers, and Chester was a Staffy Cross Rottweiler. So,
oh, like, wow, okay.
My ideal dog. Hazel is a complete mix. So she is Boston Terrier, she's French Terrier, she's Rottweiler, she's Neapolitan Mastiff, she's American Bulldog, she's British Bulldog, she's everything in one. She's a Staffy, she's a right mix. So we didn't know kind of what she'd end up like or how big she's going to get. So I think that added quite a bit of a good mix. It definitely affects.
But just for anyone listening to that mix and going, I'm sorry, what? I'm just going to go on record to say, like, if you looked at Munch's DNA on paper, you would have looked at the combinations of bull breeds, then someone put Boxer in there, then a bit of Labrador, and then a sprinkle of Collie, because who needed Collie involved?
Yeah.
And you go, on paper, she should have been a nightmare. But she wasn't. And yes, I remember her adolescent stage. Like, we sort of were taking this puppy because we took her to training really early because we weren't sure whether she was going to be typey. So we were like, okay, she has to be well-trained just in case, you know, we ever get that dreaded knock on the door of your dog has. And, you know, she did like her Kennel Club Bronze Award and did a few other tests just so I could go, look, it's trained and like it does stuff. And oh my God. But I can remember, like, she was coming to classes from pretty much, we got her weight earlier than we should have. We got her at 6 weeks. Then 8 weeks, you know, she had her first jabs, let's start taking her to classes and stuff. And she did the training, she was good. And then she hit 7 months old and someone did something and what the fuck? Like, okay, who broke the puppy? Because now it doesn't recall and it doesn't loosely walk and it just, she was a witch.
Yes. I've that's a similar name to what I've been calling Hazel lately, I will say.
What age is she now?
So we don't know her full age 100%, but okay, the vets have put her for like the 12th of August. So she's 11 months old. So we are all hormonal. And I mean, when I had Mitz, she, as soon as we got her, because she came from rescue as well, she was spayed. So I've never had to go through having a dog go through a season and then dealing with all of that stuff at the end as well afterwards. And how long it takes for those hormones to settle back down after a season as well. You know, just because the dog's stopped bleeding 3-4 months down the line, you're still very hormonal. And you notice that particularly with the body, like she's only now stopped being so saggy underneath, you know. So yeah, it's very different having a second dog.
And I mean, it's interesting as well, you're saying about like how long it takes for the hormones to settle down. I was actually I was doing workshops at the weekend and one of the dogs, and it was lovely red male collie, she was epic. And I'm friends with her person. And she was like, oh, well, you know, she's had a season and now she's at the like getting over the pregnant stage, which people might be like, what? But like, she wasn't pregnant, but that is how those hormones fluctuate. So now she's at the stage where she would be looking after puppies if she had have got pregnant. And she was like, I've really noticed like just changing what she's doing. She's just a bit more spooky, a little bit more on the back foot. And it's like, but in nature, she would have to be more alert. She would have to be more aware because she'd be looking after babies right now. So it makes sense that, again, I do think that we kind of underestimate, and any men listening, like, you need to get up on this if you're not, but to the lady listeners, we know how much hormones fuck us up.
Yeah.
Especially once you start getting to a certain age range and you're like, oh God, now what's happening? Like, walk into a room and go, what am I doing? Brain fog is real, okay? So I think we need to have a little bit more sympathy for our, like, pups when they're going through the terrible teenage bit, because it is really interesting. Let's, like, really easy, let's be honest, that as caregivers, humans, parents, whatever you want to call yourself, owners, it's really easy to get fucked off and frustrated with them.
Absolutely. And I question whether it's more so for a professional, because I mean, we say it to our owners all the time, don't we, you know, about expectations and, you know, not comparing to what you want and things like that. But equally, we're like, well, we should know what we're doing. You should know what you're doing. But actually, they don't. And
yeah,
again, when you've gone from a dog, which you've got trained to the level that you need for your household and their needs, to restart again, it definitely changes your focus, and it's hard to come back down from being at this level to go back down those tiny little baby steps again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I always kind of say that knowledge isn't always the best thing when it comes to that situation, because we know and we analyze everything and every bit of body language and every bit of behavior and every bit of reinforcement. Our brains, because that's what we do and it's what we teach, we completely overanalyze everything. And I always joke that, you know, there are days, especially with Dodge, when he's not, when he's having one of his, like, what I would, I'm going to call it a bad day because I don't know what else to call it. But when we're having a day where actually he's not being a complete knob and we're kind of having a walk, I'm still hypervigilant.
Yeah.
And I'm like, calm down. And I wish I could almost be that, not to the extent of it's okay, he's friendly, because he's not, but just being able to get my mind in that, yeah, I'm just walking my dog and it's fine.
Yeah, it's a level of carefree, isn't it? And I think when we got Hazel, you know, I quite enjoyed that level of carefree. And then getting back into the training game with her and getting her started is probably where I stumbled.
Yeah, and I think...
And we don't have anyone checking in on us. Like, when you're working with a client, you're checking in on them. You know, you're making sure they're doing things, you're pushing them, you're encouraging them.
Yep.
We're left to our own devices.
I mean, one of the things I know that I will definitely do is go to puppy classes with another trainer, because...
Yeah, and that's what I've done with Hazel. You know, we've done puppy classes, we've done emergency stop workshops, recall workshops, scent work. And yeah, I love being able to do that with her, and it does, it keeps that accountability for you. And I think as trainers, that is often what we can miss. I'm not saying everyone is like this, but it's definitely been my experience. And from speaking to other people who have lost dogs and then have gone ahead and gotten another one, they're having struggling issues. And it's like, well, if you give me a training plan, I'll give you a training plan, but I need you to check in with me every week.
Yes. You need that accountability buddy, don't you? And
yeah.
I think this is why it always kind of interests me when trainers kind of get, I can't think of the eloquent word, so I'm going to say a bit shitty about other trainers coming to their classes, like, oh, will they steal ideas, will they do? Half the time trainers just want to come to your class because A, take it as a compliment that they want to come to your class, but also it's just nice to train your own dog.
Yeah, for me, the classes were totally about building a good relationship with mm-hmm. Hazel, enjoying that time together, because I find when you are working with them one-to-one yourself and you don't have that accountability, you don't have anyone checking in, you know, it's easier to become more frustrated with them. And for me, the relationship, I don't know why I hold such a thing on the relationship this bit. At this point, but again, I think it's due to the loss. You know, relationship for me is the most important thing, but it's just nice to enjoy that time with her one-on-one outside of the house, doing things, being around others as well, mm-hmm. and getting to enjoy seeing how she acts in that sort of environment.
Yeah, I think the other thing that you need to kind of remember, and I don't want to be like, you know, teaching you to suck eggs, but you've got to also be mindful that as much as you're raising this other dog, you are going to still be grieving, because people who haven't gone through grief don't understand that it doesn't go away and you don't just fix it. And some days you don't think about it at all, but there are other days where you just sit there and go, oh my God, you know, I've still got pictures of the girls like in my office, and like every morning when like I'm getting ready, they're there. And there are mornings where I look at the picture and just burst into tears. And then there's other mornings I'm like, oh, I miss you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and whereas losing Tizer, it'll be 4 years in January. So 3.5 years since we said goodbye to Tizer, my terrier. God, I still miss him. He was an absolute little shit. But I've kind of, the grief's where it needs to sit now, whereas the girls is still raw. You know, yeah. We're in July now, so April, May, June, July. So 4 months for me with Chico and 6 months with Munch. And again, like you have with that double hit, it is really difficult. So yes, you are a little bit further down the line, but I think that you have to understand there are going to be days where you just go, do you know what? Let's just not do a lot today. And that's okay, because I think, again, as trainers, we put pressure on ourselves that we have to do training with our dogs every day.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, absolutely. And you are absolutely right with the whole grieving situation. Even though we've got another dog in our household, you know, our household isn't complete, because Hazel and Mitzi will have completely different places in my heart. And
yeah, of course.
I still have a hole missing from Mitzi. And literally the last week, my heart has physically been hurting for Mitz, you know, when I've had a bad day. Mitz would know what to do. You know, Mitz was a cuddly dog. Hazel, she will more likely come up and nip me in the ass, you know.
Not your shit, mother. Come on now. She's a bit more tough love rather than like, I would
absolutely.
Just...
She's not at the age where she wants to snuggle and just lay on the sofa with you all day under a duvet. You know, they're very different dogs. And equally, what I went through with Mitz through my life with her, my experiences and things which happened are going to be very, very different to what I go through with Hazel. So we're on our separate journeys, you know.
Yes. And it is as well, because it is those milestones in your life as well. You know, I mean, me and Tyza went through a lot together and a lot of grief, you know, whereas when we got Chica and Munch, I was already with Dale, who I then ended up marrying, and it was a whole different chapter. So it is kind of tricky to sort of work out what your heart and your head are doing. And I think we have to be mindful that, you know, we're not going, well, the other dog did. And this is something I feel we see in clients and we kind of know happens. But as professionals, we don't talk about with ourselves that it is really hard not to compare, because Munch was just, in terms of training, Munch was a freaking machine. She was wicked. And, you know, when you kind of, again, looking at her on paper, she should have been nightmare. But because I learned how to tap into that drive.
Yeah.
Honestly, if I hadn't had the lessons from her, I don't know if I've coped with Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me being brutally honest, you know, because I learned how to deal with a super freaking drivey dog that went 0-60, but would also, if you fizzed her up too much, would just grab your arm with her teeth and it really hurt. Luckily, he doesn't do that, because I was very mindful to teach him that the teeth on skin is not a thing.
Yeah. So do you believe then, because I truly do believe in this, in that you don't get the dog that you want, you get the dog that you need. And, you know, the lessons which Mitzi taught me put me on this path. You know, I wouldn't be a dog trainer. I wouldn't be sitting here in this position right now if it wasn't for Mitzi. And she was not the dog that I wanted.
Yeah, I mean, oh God, that got me right in the feels. I knew one of us was going to go at some point. Yes, 10,000%. So I kind of was already like, you know, I'd had dogs all my life. I was one of those people that had literally had dogs all my life. I kind of, the second I could crawl, there were dogs around, you know, and grew up with collie types and Sheppy types and poodles and stuff. And then Tyza was my first dog, and oh my God, he was a lot. And then I learned a lot with him, but because he was little, I kind of never really got into training properly and stuff. And then we got Chica, and I was, you know, again, she was, I hate the term, but she was a little handbag dog, you know, she was easy. And she was the easiest of, like, you know, if anyone had had Chica as their first dog and then got any other dog, like, the next dog is going to feel like a nightmare, because she was that simple. And it might be because Tyza was an arse that Chica seemed so easy. But when Munch came along, because of her breeding, because we didn't know she was going to type up, because we were being responsible, straight away we were at training classes, like, early. And then it was like, well, if we're taking Munch, we'll take Chica. Well, shit, I suppose I should do something about Tyza as well, because I didn't want Munch ended up with him, because he was pretty reactive. But because he was only 7 kilos of terrier, you just sort of popped a muzzle on him and kept him on lead and no one died. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for Munch, I wouldn't be a dog trainer now.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably still be getting trampled by horses and, like, shoveling shit for a living. Because that's what I did, you know. I was a horsey girl. And then the way my path took, you know, met Dale, got Chica, got Munch, moved to Surrey, moved away from horses, and then dogs were everything. So yes, I'm fully, you know, I wasn't looking for a shepherd when Dodge came along. But actually, I kind of, in ways, I did it the other way around. So I got that puppy, and then 2 months later, we said goodbye to Tizer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in ways, not that I didn't grieve, but the grieving process was definitely different because I had this idiot puppy that I had to deal with. And I always joke that Tizer basically had about 8 weeks to kind of prep Dodge and how to be the biggest dick possible, and then left this moral coil, and Dodge went, right, I've got this.
He did well.
He did. He passed the baton on of dickhead boy dog. And now, no, we're not getting boy dogs again. But yeah, I completely, and I know some people might think we're talking juju, but yeah, I'm a believer that the universe gives you what you need when you need it. And sometimes you question the universe's decisions.
Every day with Hazel at the moment.
Right. And again, because you've got that loss and you're like, hang on a minute. So I'm dealing with this loss. And also you've added this in, like, are you fucking sure? But also it makes us damn good trainers.
Yeah, it does. And it definitely helps with empathizing with owners and sympathizing with them.
Yeah, it's everyone's journey is different, but when you can understand the place that the person you're working with is coming from, it does help with kind of being relatable. You know, I did used to find it really hard working with families that had, especially younger children, because I don't have kids. I'm not qualified for that. So sometimes it would be hard for me to be like, what do you mean the kids can't just sit over there and wait a minute? What do you mean your kid doesn't understand going to your bed like your puppy does? It's why I don't do children, because I just feel dogs are easier. You have both. What do you think?
I have both. Very different.
So let's talk about the journey of dog training college, because we've managed to get through that whole bit with neither of us actually crying, which, well done. We both need a little pat on the back for that, because we just dealt with a really hard subject. And actually, before we go on to dog training college, I do just want to talk about the Parvo thing, because people, I don't think, understand. We understand the health ramifications of, well, that was a word of the day, wasn't it? Of dogs getting parvo and how it can be deadly, and it is a horrendous, horrendous illness. But there is also the behavioural side and the development side.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got Hazel at 18 weeks old, which you think is quite a nice age to get a dog. You know, they're at that mouldable putty stage where you can do anything with, and that was far from my experience. So we have to think that during her critical period in particular, she spent her time being isolated, being kept indoors, much time spent at the vets fighting for her life, literally. So, you know, she didn't actually get to go outside really until she was 4 or 5 months old. Wow. So for her, the outside world was a very scary thing. Getting a collar and a lead and a harness is the worst thing in the world for her at that point. And so it's taken baby steps. And though she was a puppy, she was scared of everything. And she's a very nervous Nelly. But she can cope with a lot more. But, you know, you have that in your head that you're getting a puppy and you're going to be able to go out for walks. Well, actually, I'd be lucky if I could get her out once a week, because not only was I dealing with getting over the terror of a lead coming out and then getting it on, it was then stepping out the front door. That was scary. And then it was the noises outside. Oh, my God, did they blow her mind? You know, and I remember one day we got outside the front door and it was a van. A van was parked up and he slammed his door. That sent her berserk. I then had a worker up the road who shouted across the road to another worker. That blew her mind. I then took her onto the main path to get onto the field, which had a lot of cars going by. So all of those were triggering her. And by that point, you know, we'd lost the plot and we'd walked 30 meters outside the front door. And wow. You have in your mind that, you know, I've got a puppy, being a trainer, I should be able to document all these things and show what I am putting into her. And I had to take things really, really slowly with her. And I had to cut back a hell of a lot as well, because she'd be overstimulated. She'd be overwhelmed really, really easily. She'd be trigger-stacked, you know, she would shut down. And it would then make the rest of the walk not enjoyable for her. And that wasn't where I wanted to be. So we actually spent a good 7 months of her rarely going out, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's only now that we can get her out quite regularly, even getting her harness on once a week to take her into class. That would mess her up for the rest of the week, you know.
Yeah.
So you'd be able to just go for a walk with her. So those expectations of even getting a puppy, you can't show everything that you want to do. And when you're a teacher and you've got students, you know, you want to be able to show them how to do things. Actually, I had to be a lot more delicate and gentle with Hazel and how we approach things.
But as professional to professional now, I admire that so much. And honestly, like, any trainer that understands what ethical science-based training is will go, wow, amazing, because it would have been very easy for ego to take over. And talking to Andy Hale, the episode of Just Done Film, task over care. It's very easy for task to overtake. But with a dog that's that sensitive, I mean, straight away, I'm like, so what did you do? Just open the front door and sit on the doorstep for 5 months just watching the world?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Getting the harness and the lead out, often that was as far as you could go. And and having classes every week, there were times where I had no other choice but to do it to get her out. The car as well, that was a big thing.
Okay.
She hated the car. She's petrified of the outside world. And again, this is where I think, as a professional, should she be elsewhere compared to where she was? But actually, talking about how she was and remembering that I've had to take things so slowly with her, I think we need reminding of that, don't we?
Yeah, because it is very easy to kind of think, oh my God, like last night when we went to the lovely new place and went for a lovely walk, I'm not going to go, he's loose lead walking. Just apparently I've never ever taught this dog loose lead walking ever. It's nothing I've ever taught him.
We only started loose lead walking last, probably about 6 weeks ago, because getting her in a harness, getting her outside, getting her used to the noises was what my main focus was.
That's your battle, and you have to pick it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, coming from a professional point of view, my dog should not be pulling, you know.
Mate, honestly, I met the dog yesterday going, you are 4 years old. You have done loosely walking training. You have done all these classes on how to do this thing that I need you to do right now. And he was like, yeah, but like, there's just smells and stuff and I just can't. And I was like, oh, shit. And it is really, really demotivating as a trainer, because this is when that bastard imposter syndrome starts like niggling at you. But are you qualified? But you know what? I know why he was completely overstimulated yesterday, because we went to a brand new freaking park and there were deer. Of course he was. You know, but he's overstimulated in a good way. He wants to sniff all the sniffs and pee on all the upright things. And oh my God, this is amazing. Whereas you had the other extreme of, oh no, I cannot. This is too much. And I admire the fact that you have taken it as slowly as you have, because that must have been really hard.
Yeah, Yeah, it was hard. And I think it's hard on you as a trainer as well, you know, just knowing that there are expectations of you, of your dog, being a bull breed as well, as you said earlier, you know. And I had someone literally ask me this 2 weeks ago, you know, why go for a bull breed? I love to show a bull breed in a good light. I love to show what they are capable of, you know, what they can be like and the softer side to them. You know, I love being able to show that. And, you know, I certainly couldn't have done much with her 2 months ago. But I mean, we've taken her to our 2 day practicals and I literally pass her on to anyone who's come without a dog and they use her all weekend and she is amazing in a training situation. She really.
So that is something that I cannot do with Dodge. Do you know what I mean? So that, yes, can I take Dodge to any old park? Well, not park, that's probably not the best example. But can I take Dodge into new environments? And he kind of goes, okay, yes, he's alert and whatever, but he can deal with it. Hazel can't do that. But could I just go, oh, here, work my dog? No, because no. The fact that she can work with other people, mate, that is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. I think it's just reminding ourselves, isn't it? And reminding ourselves of everything that they have gone through and all the little baby steps and the progress that we have made. So yeah, right now her recall is actually pretty good, I'd say. Loose lead work, still a little bit iffy, but actually, you know, in other ways, she's amazing.
Mate, if you're only 6 weeks in, for me, I'm 3.5 years in, it's still going to lead properly, you know, and... What do I like tell myself? And the thing is that is frustrating is when I'm in a training situation, he can do beautifully sleepwalking.
So, and I had this conversation recently with someone. If Hazel sees a clicker, she know we're in a training situation and she will do anything. In the normal world, in the house where you drop something on the floor and you don't have a clicker because you're not in a training situation, this is real life.
Yeah.
She will run loops around the garden. She will want you to chase her. She will not bring that back. She don't know drop. She doesn't know how to sit.
What are these words we're using, stupid people? I do not understand these words of which you use me. Oh, yeah. My God. Doesn't it make you feel better when you hear someone else? It's like,
she's a right cow bag when she wants to be. The moment you get that clicker out, yes.
And actually, yeah, Munch was the same. And I had to be really mindful with the clicker because the clicker got to the point where it would over arouse her if I wasn't careful because, oh my God, we're doing the training thing. I'm fucking out. This is amazing. And you'd be like, okay, but I need your brain on. No, but I can't because we're doing a thing that's really amazing. And also the other thing I want to kind of touch on that, with her kind of having the parvo and not having the kind of start to the world that, you know, textbook start of the world. What does good socializing look like? I feel that we need to start looking at it from a much more individual lens rather than going, we need to tick all these little boxes because every dog is different. But also, you have to look at the genetic side. This is something I go on about so much. But straight away, you said, oh, yeah, she's got Neo in her. Okay, well, the Neo's going to make her very suspicious.
Because, and she very much is.
Guess what? That's
on
what.
On top of the lack of habituation and lack of socialisation, any noise, you know, I mean, she is a scaredy cat.
Yeah. And when you pair those two, so you have a little genetic marker in there that goes, you have to be really conscious of things. But then the fact that she didn't learn that all these new things aren't scary and it's okay because, you know, there would have been lots of other stuff going on for her and her fighting for her life, literally. You can then go, okay, this is why she finds the world a lot. In terms of like with the lead and the harness, because straight away your brain goes, well, you just do desensitization and counter conditioning. Yeah, so how did the science work?
So, again, in a training situation, and I did try and record this for students to see the process of how you do it. But in a trainer situation, she will sit there. She will have the harness come near her. She will go to it because she sees the clicker and she knows the job and what to do. Now, you get that outside of a trainer situation, she runs for her life. You know, in particular, she used to run into her crate and she would lay down. I even had it where she fainted, like a faint and go. You know, she stood still and she just fell to the side. She completely shut down. And it was in those points where I think it was, it must have been a scent work class. It was like, I really need to get you in the car. You know, we have to go. We're on a time limit as well. You know, we've got to get there by a certain time. And again, that broke my heart because I was like, every time I have to get this on, I feel like I'm breaking our relationship.
Yeah.
And that is why I then spent the rest of the week, you know, no walks. We're not having to get that horrible thing out and things like that. And it, you know, you can't say, why do you need the harness? I could have gone lead collar. But remember, we weren't working on loose lead walking at this point. And she's a strong dog.
Yeah.
And she also, she's got Frenchie, Bulldog, Boston. You know, she's got the Brachy.
There's Brachy breeds in there. She's so very,
you know.
She's a bit of a snuffle piggy.
Panting away. So I'm very aware of that. So I couldn't just go lead to collar.
Yeah.
Which made things much harder. But
I think the other thing,
lead coming to collar, she is still not comfortable with the harness 100%. She'll have you put it on. She won't faint or completely shut down like she used to. She does a quick shake off and she's happy to then go outside. Whereas at those early stages, doing that was enough. She then wouldn't want to walk. She wouldn't want to go near the front door, wouldn't want to step out the front door, wouldn't want to hear the cars, the birds, the wind, all of that stuff. You know, life was very triggering for her.
Yeah. And I've kind of realized, sort of, I think part of it's like post COVID stuff, but being back in situations where there's a lot of people talking, there's a lot of noise and stuff. I've actually got some of those little earbud things that just dull the noise down a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's helped my brain a lot to just go, oh, okay, because it just, I always say it makes the world less, which I know might sound stupid, but it does. Now, we have to remember that dogs' sense of sight isn't, it's probably comparable to ours, but their sense of hearing and their sense of smell is so much more superior that if I, as a mere human, have days where the world is just too much, I can really empathize with her. And again, this is why working at the dog's pace and understanding, and yes, there will be days and situations where task has to take precedence. It has to, because sometimes things have to happen. You know, I don't like going to the dentist, but I have to have my teeth checked. You know, yeah. They don't like going to vets, but sometimes, and yes, we can count the condition and try and make it more positive. But sometimes things have to be done because emergencies happen or whatever. So this is where I really admire the fact that you understood that that does, like, getting her to the scent work took a lot of spoons, if we use that spoon analogy. And then I'm making the assumption that once she got scent work, she like did the thing and had the best time ever, right?
Yeah.
You weren't just going, we have to go to training class once a week.
No. She is such a good sniffer. She was naturally a good sniffer. So scent work was something which I hadn't really done with Mitz. And it wasn't really her thing, but Hazel naturally is a really good sniffer. Her nose is to the ground all the time. So I was like, I really want to harness that. I want to give her something that she loves to do. So I think building that into her was important. Equally, sometimes there were things in the room which were really, really scary for her. So we always had to navigate things because she'd never been exposed to certain things. But it was really good learning for her.
And it's part of the confidence building as well, isn't it? Because scent work does help build confidence. And, you know, some people might be like, well, why didn't you just keep her at home? But, like, at the end of the day, we've got to be realistic. You know, you're a family, you have children, you want to do things with the dog as a family. And you want to give her the most fulfilling life she can have. And yeah, the journey's taking a bit longer than I'm sure you envisioned, but you're going at her speed. And actually, even just us talking now, like, it sounds to me like you have made huge, huge progress with her.
Yeah, we have. We just, yeah, I know. And again, it's just needing that reminder, isn't it? Because you don't have anyone checking in on you or going over a training plan with you. So you can't remember everything that you've ticked off. You know, and over the last couple of months, we've had a regression in going back to teeth. And again, this will be because she was separated, she was isolated as a puppy, and, you know, she missed all of that important play.
But also, let's remember that, again, going back to her genetics, biting stuff is reinforcing.
Yeah.
There are lots of breeds in there that bite shit out.
I know.
We do need to be mindful of that, especially when we talk about the bull breeds, because one thing that really pisses me off is when people are like, oh, they're nanny dogs and this and that. I'm not saying that there is not a smooth, a lovely, soft, cuddly, wonderful side, but we also have to honour the fact that they were bred to mess up other animals. Now, notice I say animals, not humans. It's why they're so good with peoples, but it's why, especially in multi-dog households, having a bull breed in, you then have to be very mindful if you're going to have multiple bull breeds, because arguments happen in any multi-dog household.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you've got multiple bull breeds, it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Hazel in particular, she loves, for bull breeds, they love to grab a hold of anything, run away with it and kill it. You know, they like to shake it. Fluff it. They love pulling it apart and getting the insides out, you know.
Yeah, Munch taught Dodge how to dissect because he didn't do that.
Yeah.
And she went, dude, look, this really fun game. And I'm like, oh, great. Now there's two that wreck every soft toy, right?
Yeah. So actually, we've worked on a retrieve with Hazel. And literally, someone said to me the other day, it's very rare you see a bull breed retrieve. It's like, yes, I know.
Because it's important.
They like to kill it. They like to dissect it. That's part of their predatory as well as their play motor patterns.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's something that we have to honour about them. And it's one of the reasons why we love them.
Absolutely. And with Mitts in particular, you know, I loved playing, and I wouldn't recommend this for everyone to do, but hands and mouth. For staffies, yeah. Hands and mouth play is their thing. Don't quite trust Hazel yet. She hasn't quite got the bite inhibition. She was amazing. But we've gone back in her regression with her teenage years. But that is what they love to do. They love that interaction.
Whereas when you kind of play with Dodge, he'll tug with you and he'll do all that stuff, but he's actually very mindful of not making contact with your skin when he can. And don't get me wrong, there are times where, like, I'll grab the ball out of my pocket, and if I'm holding the string too close to the ball, like, he will get a knuckle. He generally manages to chomp like one knuckle, and you're like, good boy, because that's my bad handling skills, that's not his fuck up. But whereas Munch would, like, you had to have two hands on the toy and you had to present the piece of the toy that was going, otherwise she would just grab your hand, because why not?
And that's at the stage where we're at with Hazel. So she loves to play with toys on her own. She cannot play with toys with you because your hand is the toy.
Yeah. Because it's the moving part.
And you've got a meter worth of rope and it's your hand that she goes for, you know.
But I will just say, in her defence, a certain little chihuahua that used to live in this house would work her way up to the toy, up the toy to your hand, so you'd let go of it. And she would deliberately nip the side of your hand to make you let go of the toy. And chihuahuas aren't known for this, but it was something that she... Because they were like, yeah, teach it to rag, it'll be fun. And again, you don't see many chihuahuas doing proper rag games. Oh my God, Chica was ferocious. But I think she sort of would see Munch go near the hand and was like, I'm going to give that a go.
It worked.
Mate, right? They soon learn what works and what is reinforcing. So that's a very nice segue to, because we reverse back, we'll go back again, dog training college. Why? Yeah. Where did it start? What happens?
So I was in rescue. I'd rescued Mitz, and as I said earlier, she was not the dog that I wanted. You know, I had a specific criteria because I had a young boy at the time. I had family with dogs, so I wanted a dog friendly. I had two cats, so it needed to be cat friendly. I had a child, you know, I needed it to be people friendly. So
dogs, cats, children, adults. That's a lot of friendlies.
Yeah, it was. It was. And Mitz was, I mean, she was her first meeting with my son, who was probably about 3 years old then. She jumped up and bit him on the nose, you know. We still took her home. She was people friendly. And I will say the bite on the nose, it was a typical bull breed, staffy, overexcitement, chatter in the face, you know.
Kiss. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But when I took her home, she then nearly ate one of my cats. And so we found out the hard way that she was not cat friendly nor dog friendly. And again, I had to find out the hard way. I was specifically told that she was dog friendly. At the time, I took her to meet my mum's staffy, My mum ended up in hospital, let's put it that way. Okay. Found out the hard way.
Yeah.
Things that she wasn't friendly with. And
yeah, breaking up bull breeds is not a fun thing to do and can easily end up that. So, I mean, so the first question I've just got asked is, why didn't you just go, nope?
Yeah, and when my mum was in hospital, you know, we weren't sure if her hand was broken through the force and things like that, what damage was going to be done. I did at that point. I was like, I don't trust this dog. You know, I don't know what she's capable of. And equally, at that point, I was not a dog trainer, you know, so I didn't have the knowledge or the understanding. And I was way out of my depth. But once things in the moment, everything's heightened at that point. Yes. Once things calmed down, I was like, no, I'm not going to give up on her. And I started looking for help. So I reached out to a few trainers and I did not like the advice in which I was told. You know, we're talking about shock collars, prong collars, boppers, which is a tennis ball wrapped in a tea towel and you're told to hit anywhere bar the nose.
At least they told you not to hit it in the nose.
Of course. What? Makes such a difference. So though I wasn't a trainer, though I didn't have the knowledge, I knew kindness, you know, and that went against how I felt things were. So I walked away from every trainer and the things in which they were saying to me. And I found someone that I did agree with. And I kind of started, because I was in rescue as well, I was working with dogs in the pound. I was going in and assessing. I wanted to be able to do more for them as well. So I started volunteering at classes, put myself through courses. And in the end, I took over the classes in which I was helping out on. That person wanted to retire and I brought dog training college off them. So that's what happened. That's about 7-8 years ago now.
Yeah.
If not slightly longer, I think how old my youngest is. Yeah.
I know, when you suddenly go, I'm sorry, where did that time go? What happened? Like, it makes you feel old, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And as we said earlier, time is just flying by as well. Yes. It's so scary. So then I had dog training college, and dog training college itself has changed dramatically in the direction in which that was going. Because, you know, for years I was adamant, I don't want to teach people how to become dog trainers. That's not my thing. And, you know, that's kind of where I'm at now. That's what we're doing, and we're doing it very successfully. There's been lots of challenges come up, and equally lots of things that have shaped our path to get to where we are today. And I have an amazing team behind me, which I'm really, really thankful for. It's not something that I could do on my own.
It is a well-oiled machine, I have to say. It is a very well-oiled machine.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it is. And we're very proud of that and the team behind it. Everyone plays a part, you know.
Yeah.
Training College wouldn't be able to be where it is today and do what it does today without the team behind it. So
yeah.
I can't take credit for everything and I won't. So that's what we're, where we are today, really. And education for me is really, really important because I've worked with many owners where they've been in the same situation which I was at the beginning of my journey, getting bad advice from people.
Yeah.
I want to be able to educate people, not only dog owners, but dog walkers, you know, pet professionals in general, and help people in their journeys.
I mean, I think there's been a little meme doing the rounds on the social this week that is, it's funny, but it's funny because it's true, but it's also heartbreaking that the person that has all the knowledge and the understanding and the experience and the qualifications and has put time, money and effort into learning about dogs and training and ethical practice and all the rest of it has like one little microphone in front of them. And then the person that's on the TikTok with all the followers has all the microphones. And social media is a blessing and a curse in both ways. I mean, let's face it, a lot of the networking we do as trainers and professionals is on social. But it's also really easy for shit information to get out there. And as you know, I run Hoop as well. Do you run Dog Training College? We have a code of ethics that our trainers need to follow and stick to, because we want to make sure that they are giving the best advice, the most relevant advice, but also that they're training. I feel like kindness is the wrong word, but I do feel like it is a part of it, because as you say, you know, especially with a dog like Dodge, with a dog like Hazel, it would be very easy to go heavy-handed with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's not the way. And we're not saying it doesn't work, because unfortunately it does. But, you know, freaking out again, going back to the episode I did with Andy a few weeks ago, he was talking about being caned at school. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, I thought that shit finished in like the 1800s. Apparently not. That broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how people can use devices on dogs, tools in the loosest sense of the world, and then go, oh yeah, but it's fine because it works. Because actually you have to look at the emotional experience of the dog, and I feel that it would have been very easy for you to have gone, right, well, we're just going to put Hazel in a collar and she's just got to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And just made her.
Yeah.
And the things from what you've described, she would have probably have shut down.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't have been reacting and she wouldn't have been speaking. And she would just turn into a robot. And to the untrained eye, oh my God, look how well behaved she is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd have been able to tick that off, wouldn't I, very quickly.
Oh, look, my dog does a thing. Wicked. Yeah. Cool. But can it? What is the dog doing? You know, it's one of the reasons why I've always been so honest about the journey with Dodge, because I was not prepared for the adolescent stage at all. I was like, yeah, I've got this. And also I feel adolescence with a girl and a boy was very different, which again, I wasn't prepared for. I feel in ways girls are easier. They're a little bit more spooky and you have to be a bit mindful of them, but I just feel like they don't turn into as big a dicks as the boys do. My experience, I've got other friends that are like, oh God, no, I'd never have bitches. They're a pain in the ass. Like, so again, I think it depends what suits your personality. But what I like with what you're doing with the Dog Training College is you're kind of getting people to look at specializing in areas rather than just trying to do all the dog training.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's stuff. Something which I can't, you know, bleat about enough. Like, if a case isn't for you, refer on. It's okay to ask for help, you know, and because I do have a team behind me, we are able to offer support. So when people do qualify with us, they do become certified, We have trainer support clinics twice a week with two of our amazing mentors, John Davison and Claire Litzer-Huckle. And, you know, they're there for support, because I find a lot of course providers, once you're done, you're done. You're out there on your own. And it's a lonely world as a dog trainer. It's a hard world as well. And yes, you may have qualified in becoming a dog trainer, but you've got to run a business. And if you've only learned about being a dog trainer, you're going to fail. You know, you're going to fall flat very, very quickly, because there is so much more to being a dog trainer. We have to wear hundreds of different hats, you know. So being able to offer the support for newbies, even people who have been in the business for years, being able to run through a case and just make sure you haven't missed anything out, or you can go, yeah, you're on the right path. Just having that, having someone say that to you, you know, especially if you are facing imposter syndrome at that moment in time, that can mean the world to someone. And equally, we're always learning. There's always going to be different things. And actually, we may see things very differently compared to how someone else would approach the case. And being able to learn, you know, that's an ongoing process, isn't it? Our learning never, never stops. So yeah, being able to offer that is something which I'm really, really proud of.
Yeah, massively. And I'm just going to do a sneaky plug for my course that's happening in Australia this year, because we're doing something very different, where I'm doing a collab with two of amazing trainers out in Australia, Colleen and Michelle. And I'm going out to teach hoopers, and I'm doing the hoopers thing. But the four-day section, we're doing like the level one, the level two, and then there's a brand new judges course coming in. But the other element that's being added into this course is the business side. And that's what Colleen specializes in. So we are giving the trainers the knowledge of how to do the training, but also we are adding that business element in. And it's, I think it's the first time that a course has been put together like that. And I'm really excited about it and slightly terrified. But if you are in Australia listening, 2023 is the year. And I think one of the early episodes this season, I think it was episode one or two, when I spoke with Michelle, we spoke about it. So get in touch with Michelle to sign up, because I'm coming to us and it's going to be amazing. But it is adding that business thing. And I'm not doing the business side of it. I have a specialist person that's doing the business side, because I'm not qualified.
Yeah. And even being in the business for years, I'm sure you'll still learn something as well, which, yeah.
I know, my marketing. This is where I struggle, you know. Even I was talking to Greg today, who I do Dog Training Dictionary podcast with, and he turned around to me and he went, mate, don't take this wrong way. He went, but your marketing for your podcast is rubbish. And I'm like, I know, because I don't know how to do it. Like, it's really tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is.
So what do you guys do, like, within Dog Training College to kind of help new trainers coming through, and also old wizened trainers that maybe want to just refresh a little bit as well, because we never stop learning?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have our membership, the Unlimited Pass, as well, which gives people access to our vault, which is where everything is. So that's webinars, Facebook Lives. Back in the day, we don't do them anymore, but that's when we first started breaching out into education. Yeah. Crash courses, masterclasses, deep dives, the conference, all things like that is in there. And as you know, we don't just do everything in-house ourselves. We, you know, we get experts of their field in to talk about that stuff. Plus we're putting on masterclasses this year. So we're doing four masterclasses this year where we're mainly flying people over, I will say. At the beginning of the year, we had the three pet medics. So we had Dr. Nick Thompson, Dr. Connor Brady, Dr. Brendan Clark.
Wow.
We then flew Dr. Clive Wynn over, which I will say is my highlight of the year.
So far,
yeah, absolutely. Because coming up, we're flying Dr. Susan Friedman over next week.
I honestly can't wait for that one. Like, I literally get goosebumps when you say it. Like,
yeah. And in October, we're flying Michael Shakashio over from New York. So another exciting one.
Wow. Michael's amazing. Michael's been on the podcast, and I'm hoping to get Dr. Susan on. But Michael's wicked, and the work he does with aggressive dogs is just wow. So if people are thinking, oh my God, these are like some names and I want to come, like how?
So how, that's the tricky thing, because it is exclusive to our members and unlimited pass holders.
We like exclusivities.
Our members, our pass holders, they don't pay anything extra for these things. So we put these on to bring these amazing experts to them. And it's a real opportunity for people to, you know, they've been on courses with people for the last 6 months. They've been speaking to people via Facebook, via the Vault. It's a real nice opportunity to meet people in person and put faces to names, and the atmosphere on the days, which you'll experience, they're just so good, and you really can't beat being in person.
Yeah. I think as well, because we had to, didn't we? The world had to move to digital, and we kind of got used to doing things digital, and in ways it opened up so many new avenues, because we could attend conferences that were being held in whatever country, you know, but it is nice getting people back in a room together.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, online is marvelous, because it enables us to reach those speakers, those experts, which we would never get that opportunity to do so if it was only in person.
But this is where I find, you know, I've still got access to conferences. I haven't watched all the webinars yet.
Yeah.
Whereas I know if it had been in person, I would have sat down and I would have watched it.
I'm very much the same as well. I've still not logged on to a couple of things I've not looked at, because I know it's there. And yeah, when you're attending something, you've booked that time out. Whereas when it's something at a different time zone that you're never going to be able to attend live,
yeah,
finding the time to do it and remembering as well that you've got it never fits into your life.
Like, and neither of us should be admitting that, really, because we both have online content and we're like, but I feel that it's better to be honest, and we understand that. Yeah, online stuff can be amazing, but also in-person stuff is cool as well. The one thing I have to say that I do like with online stuff is that if you mishear something, or if you kind of go, oh shit, what was that? You can just rewind and watch it back again.
And that's why I love our Vault, because if there's a topic that, you know, you've got a case come up and you're not 100% sure, or you just want to refresh your knowledge and make sure that you go in, you know, full blown, know everything, you've got everything listed down of where you're going to go with it, you can just log on, you can, you know, find the topic, find the speaker, and just refresh yourself and go over it. And I think that is phenomenal. That's something that you can't really beat.
Yeah, definitely. So if people kind of want to know more, how do you join up? Like, do you just go, yeah, I want to be a member and pay you all the money, or
so no, we release our membership once a year.
Oh, it's very exclusive.
Yes, very exclusive, and that will be in October. However, this year we're slightly changing things. So it's very, very exciting, and I can't give too much away just yet, but just keep an eye on our socials and all will be revealed very, very soon.
Oh my God, you've like left us with like a little Easter egg of like, but you can't open it yet. I feel like we're at Christmas Eve. We're not allowed the presents yet, ma'am. But fair play, because it is going to keep everyone busy and kind of going, oh, what's happening? But the fact you've had those four masterclasses this year, that's worth the membership anyway. Without all the other stuff going on, all the Vault stuff and the previous webinars. And I did one of the live chats, actually. I think I came on as one of the experts, and we sort of had a little chat with other trainers just to go over the cases they were going through and stuff. And that for me was, I loved it, because it got my training break going, because I mean, before we start recording, you know, I joked that I don't quite know where I am on the pecking order now, because I teach dogs to run through hoops. But then I have to go, no, but Carrie, you are qualified and you do know what you're talking about. So for me, it is nice to kind of get into that, you know, back into that other training stuff that isn't just hoopers. Like, it is good for my brain to remember. But also, a lot of it does relate back to the sports stuff and what I'm doing. So it's amazing how, as much as I kind of would go, right, I am a sport dog trainer now, it's nice to still keep a toe in the companion dog world, because...
But equally, so many cases and things that crop up is because dogs' needs aren't being met. And actually, coming from the sport world, that's another... it's another path which people who never dip into the sport world of canines, you know, that's something which they may not have thought about.
Yeah. And,
you know, with all the breeds that we've got going on and their problems and trying to meet their needs, it's another insight, isn't it, which people can add.
Yeah, and especially because Hoopers is such an inclusive, and yes, I'm biased on my sport choice, but, you know, this weekend gone, so my first workshop of the morning, it was a real, real mixed group, and I had two dogs on it that I've been training with for a little while. We've probably done maybe 3-4 sessions with them. They are proper sport dog bred. They're Collie Papillon crosses, which they're wicked. They're cool and they're pretty, and oh my God, they do the learning quick. But then I had a family that came along with a little cockapoo that was 3/4 poodle, 1/4 cocker. And then later on, I had 3/4 cocker, 1/4 poodle in one of the other groups. And it was so lovely to be teaching all these different groups of just different places where they were. And the bitch that was just coming out of season and was having the hormone stuff, she was in one of the groups as well. And for me, it just gets my juices going, because I have a layout and I have a lesson plan in my head. But having what the dog that's a sport bred dog that does loads of training, has loads of background in, to the dog that's never ever seen a hoop before, Jesus Christ, I had to raise and lower my criteria. Okay, so you're going to do this. And one of the things I said right at the start of the group to everyone was, you are working with your dog and you are the team, and you are not comparing your team to any of the others. As professionals, this is also something we need to remember. As long as you are following best practice, that's the minimum.
Yeah, you're being kind, you're being ethical.
Don't be a dick to dogs. As long as you're not being a dick to dogs. The hoodie of that is available in my Tmall shop. Just don't be a dick to dogs. But it's very easy as professionals to compare ourselves to what other professionals are doing, especially with our own dogs.
Yeah.
And this is bringing us back full circle.
Yeah.
The journey you were on with Mitzi is a very, very different journey to what you're on with Hazel. The journey I was on with Munch and Chica and Tizer was different even to the journey I was on with Minx, which is completely different to the journey I'm on with Dodge. And I could then compare myself to, I'm going to pick on Nick Benger because he's a good mate, but he's got, you know, a German Shepherd now. And it could be very easy for us to compare each other to what we're doing, but they've come from completely different lines.
Yes, he's done a lot of research.
Dude, he drove to freaking Germany to get his German. Like, I mean, I feel that's commitment. But that's very different to the journey. I'm going to shout out Jodie O'Connell now, who got one of Jenny Gould's shepherds from over here. They're very different creatures, although they are the same breed.
Yeah.
And I think we need to start honouring what we are doing with a team and learning from others to work best with our team, rather than comparing what our team's doing to another.
Yeah, absolutely. You put that really well.
I feel like we should steal that as a soundbite. Like, that's going to be the next t-shirt. Worry about your own team, not everyone else's.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
that will be on T-Mill this week and people can buy. People are going, what, we can buy t-shirt? I know, this is what I mean. I'm really bad at marketing. Like, I have my own t-shirt range and I just don't market it. Like, it's rubbish. So my aim this year is to get better at marketing or hire someone to do it for me, which is probably actually a better plan, right?
Yeah, yeah. The amount of hours that you put into trying to learn the stuff and then trying to do it and then all the fails which you do, get someone who does it day in, day out, who are good at it, who can produce.
I'm laughing right now because I know that's the most logical and sensible thing to do.
The amount of time you spend is money down the drain. You could be earning doing that.
Okay, so that's your lesson, and I appreciate that lesson. I will try and be an adult and listen to that. Leanne, but people that want to find out more, that are maybe kind of interested in becoming a member, do you do standalone courses or is it just the membership?
So we do standalone courses, and we actually have something very exciting coming out.
Look, she's doing one of those things where she's going to tell us the thing, but not tell us the thing.
No, I can't remember the exact date, but it is August, and it is Danielle Beck. She is leading this one, and it is an assistance dog specialist course.
Wow.
So it's assistance dog specialist program led by Danielle Beck, coming out in August. It is not open to everyone because it is aimed at professionals. It's a minimum of 8 hours learning. There's case studies in there, there's step-by-step tutorials, mm-hmm. not teaching you how to be a dog trainer. Again, this is aimed at people
you who already need the base skills. This is like an A-level course. You have to have done your GCSEs before you do your A-levels. Okay,
absolutely. So we're accepting people who applications for that. We're going through them, making sure they're a good fit, making mm-hmm. sure they fit with our code of conduct, all of that jazz. So if anyone's interested in that, feel free to send us an email, because you wouldn't have had the email come out for you to join up. But you can get in contact with us at support@dogtrainingcollege.co.uk, or send us a message on our Facebook page. You know, easy to find, Dog Training College. We're on Instagram, TikTok, we're not quite there.
I'm not gonna lie, my TikTok is basically just videos of me and Dodge messing around, having a lovely time, and occasionally I find a cool filter and go, yay, this thing's fun. TikTok's hard.
Yeah,
TikTok's really hard. Also, dare I say, this is my personal experience, and I'm not casting aspersions on anyone else, but I feel like as an elder millennial stroke late Gen Xer, TikTok confused me, and I tried to get on that Threads thing, and like, I'm not gonna lie, I forgot about it 3 days later.
I haven't even
I signed up and did a thing, and I think I've done 3 posts and was like, yeah, that's just something else for me to remember. Like, TikTok is mainly for me. I do watch some dog stuff, but it's mainly just me and my friends sending each other stupid sarcastic videos rather than actually using it for an educational purpose, which is bad because we should try and do stuff. Younglings that are listening, put good stuff on TikTok.
Yeah. I try and keep my TikTok very separate from dog training, because it is a release for me.
Yeah, it does.
I don't want to be seeing dog training and bad dog training.
Oh, I've blocked so many accounts on TikTok.
I mean, if there's a dog training video and I'm on my personal feed, I will just scroll, and I do apologize, but I just can't be overwhelmed all the time.
But it's important to look after your mental health, and that's a good note to end on, that as trainers, we compassion fatigue is a thing, and we can get overwhelmed, and it is important to look after ourselves as trainers, because if we burn out, then we're not going to be helping anyone. So
you can't help anyone if you need that support yourself.
Yes, mind your brain, and if you need help, there are people to speak out to. And this is why being part of an organization like Hooper's World, like Dog Training College, if you're a little bit stuck on a case, that there are other trainers there to go, it's cool, try this, what about this, have you looked at this? Because everyone has a different journey and different experience, and looking through things from a slightly different lens. And sometimes you won't have intentionally missed it, but someone just has a different perspective, and you go, Oh my God, that. At the weekend, I learned, apparently this is a really well-known agility move that people have been doing for centuries, allegedly. I've never been shown it. And I've gone, oh my God, that would really work for Dodge. So now I've got a new tool in my kit that I've been teaching hoopers for how many years now? But the weekend, I learned something new as well.
Yeah. And so, that's really important. No matter how long you've been doing the job, do reach out if you're struggling. Like, yes, we're always there for our members, for our students in general. Like, you know, we're a phone call away, we're an email away. Jump on the messenger if needs be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really important thing to remember. So, guys, as always, you can follow me on the socials at Canine Hoopers World, at Dodge Shepherd on the Insta. Yeah, there's a team meal shop, Sparkle Dog Trainers. I'm going to do a quick plug for that. There's some cool kind of slightly sarcastic plus R reinforcement training stuff, and my life living with a reactive dog. So there's some cool stuff on that, and I'll try and share a link in the show notes. Until next time, stay safe, be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Take care, guys. Bye. I just wanted to ask you a real quick favor. If you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it's going to help other people find me and listen to what I'm doing here at Canine Hoopers World. We're now on all the socials. So we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook, and we are officially on the TikTok at Canine Hoopers World. And remember to check out our website, www.caninehoopersworld.com, where you can find out information on in-person courses, online courses, and if you're doing hoopers with your dog, you can also join in with our online achievement awards. These are open to any person, any dog, anywhere in the world to come and test your skills and get yourself a cool ribbon.